We now come to the urgent question. Alex Burkhart, Shadow Secretary.
To ask the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster to make a statement on the Cabinet Office review into Labour Together and ABCO Worldwide.
Secretary Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Freedom of the press is a cornerstone of our democracy. The government is committed to upholding and protecting that freedom. Journalists must be able to do their job without fear or favour, including holding politicians of all political parties to account on behalf of the public that we all serve. In the last week, there have been a number of media reports about the actions of the think tank Labour Together in 2023 and 2024. Some of those media reports have included allegations about the conduct of the Joint Parliamentary Undersecretary of State between the Cabinet Office and the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, the Honourable Member for Makerfield, who was previously the Director of Labour Together. As the Prime Minister confirmed last week, he asked civil servants in the Cabinet Office Proprietary and Ethics Team to establish the facts. As members across the House will know, all civil servants are bound by the Civil Service Code, which dictates that they act with integrity, honesty, objectivity and impartiality. The exercise to establish the facts around these allegations was bound by those principles. That work has now concluded and the facts have been reported to the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister has been advised that the matter should be referred now to the independent adviser on ministerial standards, which the Prime Minister has done today. Mr. Speaker, this is not a new process, but a continuation of the process the Prime Minister has started, and the Prime Minister will make a judgment when he has received the advice from the independent adviser. This will happen very soon, and his advice to the Prime Minister will be made public in the normal way. The independent adviser is appointed to provide impartial, independent advice to the Prime Minister in line with his published terms of reference. The current independent adviser was appointed under the last administration by the Prime Minister's predecessor and is independent of the government. He will provide his independent advice directly to the Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to reiterate again that a free and independent press is an absolutely essential part of a free, open and democratic society and is one of the things that makes our country great. Representing the public as a minister is a privilege and a duty, and public scrutiny is rightly part of that. The government is committed to protecting freedom of the press, and no journalist should ever be intimidated for trying to hold those in power to account.
Alex Burkhart.
Well, thank you for granting this urgent question, sir. And the details of this story are quite extraordinary, even by the standards of this government. Whilst director of the think tank Labour Together, the now Minister for the Cabinet Office, the member for Makerfield, paid a PR agency to investigate the backgrounds and motivations of British journalists who had written about Labour Together's breaches of electoral law, of which there were many, more than 20, the most famous being a failure to declare £730,000 worth of donations. The agency produced a report which included an allegation that those journalists in question had relied on Russian hacking. Needless to say, those reports were entirely spurious. The Minister has claimed that the agency acted beyond its brief. But in the past few days, an email from the agency to the Minister has been published showing that he was shown that a, quote, human intelligence investigation into these journalists would take place. That investigation included details of one journalist's Jewish faith and made claims about his ideological upbringing and personal relationships. The report was then circulated to key members of the Labour Party and to GCHQ, who swiftly said there was no case to answer. Mr. Speaker, this looks, to all intents and purposes, like a deliberate attempt to smear and intimidate journalists whose only crime had been to report that Labour Together had broken electoral law. As of today, it is very difficult to see how the Minister's position is tenable. The referral to the independent adviser, which the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has just announced, is the right thing to do. But it should have been done immediately. It should not have been the case that this was dealt with internally in the Cabinet Office, where the minister in question is a minister. He's a minister with responsibility for inquiries and whistleblowing. You couldn't make this stuff up. And so I must ask the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, why has the minister not been suspended whilst this investigation is going on? We must also ask, because he refers to the work of the Proprietary and Ethics Team, we must also ask about the membership of that team currently, because it is known that a political appointment was made to a civil service role of a woman who was previously an employee of Labour Together. Does he now accept that appointment was wrong? It must also be the case, Mr. Speaker, that very many people took money from Labour Together. The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, the Foreign Secretary, the Home Secretary, the Deputy Prime Minister, the list goes on. An organisation set up to conceal the source of its donations from the public and from the Labour Party. Is it not time for an investigation into Labour Together?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. I'll take the questions in reverse order. The Shadow Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster accused me of taking money from Labour Together. That is not true, Mr Speaker. I had a number of seconded staff into my office as a shadow member of the Shadow Cabinet, which, as I'm sure members opposite will know, is an important contribution that's made to political parties when you do not have access, when the opposition doesn't have access to the civil service. But no money was taken, not £1, not one penny, and seconded staff were reported in the proper way. So I hope that the Shadow Chancellor might be able to revoke those comments when he gets the opportunity to do so. His second question was about the investigation being led by the proprietary and ethics team. I can confirm that that was led by a senior member of staff, which is not the member of staff he was referring to, who reported directly to the Prime Minister. And his first question was why the minister in question is not suspended whilst this investigation is taking place. It's because the establishment of the independent advisor on ethics can only investigate ministers whilst they are in office. If the minister had been suspended or removed from office, the independent advisor would not be able to undertake his work. And the Prime Minister thinks it's important that the independent advisor is given the opportunity to do just that.
Don't trick it.
Very much indeed, Mr Speaker. And can I put it to the minister that a significant number of ministers in this government did receive large sums of money, including himself, from Labour Together. And I wonder whether I think he received almost £60,000. He's shaking his head. If that's untrue, then I withdraw it. But still, a number of ministers did. And my point is this. Did it not leave a bad taste in many people's minds in the country, if you can have a bad taste in your mind, that so many ministers were standing in judgment on another minister who himself had been the director of Labour Together? Putting all that together, it is clearly the right thing to do to hand all of this investigation over to a third independent party. But can I say, narrowing the investigation down to simply one man is a mistake when Labour Together itself has made a number of serious blunders.
Mr Speaker, to repeat myself, just for the record, I did not receive £1 in money from Labour Together, and I would appreciate it if members didn't keep repeating that falsehood. His question about the independent advisor is it's in the title. The independent advisor is independent of government and is looking at this in the proper way, as he would expect, and we will wait for that advice to come to the Prime Minister, which, as I say, I expect to happen very shortly.
Sir, only Liberal Democrat spokesperson.
Mr Speaker, the Liberal Democrats are appalled by reports of smear tactics being used by the party who came into government with a promise to clean up politics after a decade of sleaze under the Conservatives. Investigative journalists have a vital role to play in holding governments to account and commercial entities. A free and fair press is the cornerstone of a thriving democracy, and this revelation is an outrageous attack on our free press. So can the government clarify what steps they are taking to uphold the independence of journalism in this country? Successive governments have eroded the public's trust in politics, so will this government now implement the Liberal Democrats' suggestion of putting the ministerial code on a statutory footing? And I've heard what the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has said about keeping Minister Simons in his job while the investigation takes place, but would he not agree with me this is yet one more example of the government insisting that process has to take precedence over political judgment? And can a way not be found for the minister to step aside while a full investigation is undertaken?
Yeah. I thank the Honourable Lady for her question. The best route for independent investigations of these types is the independent ethics advisor, and as I've informed the House, he can only investigate sitting ministers. That process is important, and whilst it's not for me to make the case one way or the other for the minister in question, he refutes the allegations and needs to be given the chance to go through that process. The independent advisor will then independently give a view to the Prime Minister in relation to the ministerial code and other issues, and then ultimately it's a question for the Prime Minister as to what should happen next. I would also just slightly correct her, if I may. I think the accusations being made are not against the Labour Party or the government, but against the think tank Labour Together.
John McDonald.
I'm the secretary of the NUJ parliamentary group, and we take a specific role in trying to protect the interests of journalists able to report honestly and fairly across the world. What we saw in this activity, we believe, was an attempt to smear journalists to prevent them publishing the truth, reporting the truth. So that's why I've written on 5 occasions to the General Secretary of the Labour Party and to the Prime Minister asking for an independent inquiry. I was told in the end that there was an inquiry going on by the Communications and Public Relations Association. That's not a regulatory body. I was told the Cabinet Office was then assembling the facts, not an investigation, but assembling the facts. And we now know, actually, there's ex-Labour Together staffer within that team itself. And we do know that ministers have received donations, often to their office or their campaign. And the scale of those donations from Labour Together is shocking, to be frank. It's almost as though an organisation has bought a political party. That's some of our worries. And now we're told this will be referred to the independent advisor. Is it true that the independent advisor will investigate the whole sequence of events around this with regard to Labour Together, not just the role of this individual MP, now a junior minister within government, during that period whilst he was an MP or a minister, but we get the full truth of what went on? Because this, at the moment, does not pass the smell test, as far as I'm concerned.
Minister Jones.
Mr. Speaker, as the House will know, the Independent Advisor on Ethics has the remit to investigate ministers on behalf of the Prime Minister in relation to concerns that the government has standing to ask those questions. Any questions about what happened or did not happen within Labour Together as a private organisation is a matter for the Board of Labour Together.
Sir Alex Shelbrook. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, to...
Oh, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To paraphrase Churchill, a free society at the cornerstone is a free press. And I'm afraid that whatever the investigation may be looking into, Minister Simons has admitted that he set the investigation going because he didn't like the report that had been issued into donations. That shouldn't need an independent inquiry, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister should sack this minister now. So the Minister is here as Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, effectively representing the Prime Minister. So I ask, Mr. Speaker, will the Prime Minister U-turn before or after the Prime Minister's questions this week?
Secretary Jones.
Mr. Speaker, as I've said repeatedly, the process is now for the independent adviser to follow, for advice to be presented to the Prime Minister, and at that point the Prime Minister will make a decision.
Mr. Speaker, we expect integrity from our journalists and we expect integrity from our ministers. In the light that we now hear 109 MPs received funding from Labour Together, can he say what involvement the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards has had and what advice was given to those 109 MPs regarding reporting the funding that they received from Labour Together?
And Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Member knows, any donations that individuals receive, whether from Labour Together or a trade union, Momentum or any other organisation, is a matter for them to declare in line with the rules, and I don't think there's been any accusation that members have been in breach of those rules.
Esther McVeigh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The steps taken by the former head of Labour Together to smear journalists when they dared to look into the murky finances of this Labour think tank is nothing short of chilling. No longer head of Labour Together, he's now serving as a minister in the Cabinet Office, the department currently looking into his actions, so he'll be marking his own homework. So when is the member for Makerfield going to be sacked if he won't do the decent thing and resign?
Secretary Jones.
I know my voice is going, Mr. Speaker, but maybe the Honourable Lady didn't hear my statement. The process is being led by the Independent Advisor for Ethics, which is not the Cabinet Office. And as I've said, the Independent Advisor will report to the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister will then make a decision.
Rebecca Longbairn.
Mr. Speaker, I'm the chair of the NUJ Parliamentary Group and we've long campaigned for press freedom, usually in relation to authoritarian regimes, but it seems that the surveillance and political intimidation of journalists is a threat much closer to home. And as we've heard today, that threat is not being adequately investigated. So will the Minister agree with the NUJ, myself and other colleagues, that we need an urgent, independent and transparent inquiry into the activities of Labour Together and ACPO, and we need stronger legislation to prevent the corporate surveillance of journalists.
Secretary Jones.
As I've said, Mr. Speaker, the independent advisor will be looking at the testimony and evidence in relation to the minister in question and advising the Prime Minister in relation to actions where the government has standing. Questions for other agencies and organisations are either subject to their relevant trade bodies or for decisions for their private board.
Mr. Jordan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm a former journalist and member of the NUJ, and I cannot express sufficiently my anger at hearing that one of my former profession was investigated in this way in an attempt to intimidate them. The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has made a great plea of the fact that it's not the government that investigated them, it was Labour Together, but in the mind of the public, the two are now linked. Does the government not need to take urgent action to distance itself from this organisation, cut off links, and make sure there's some transparency about what exactly went on?
Secretary Jones.
As I've said, Mr. Speaker, in relation to anything the government is responsible for, we of course uphold the principles that the Honourable Member speaks passionately about and which we in the government agree with wholeheartedly. And if there are changes that need to be made in government, we stand ready to do so. As I say, for matters of private organisations, the government is unable to take the steps to investigate private organisations directly unless there's a legal basis to do so. And therefore, it's a question for the independent organisation to conduct its own investigations.
Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm curious, I'm not sure who Labour Together are, what they are, what their purpose is. I've got no idea whatsoever. However, if you believe, and I don't believe everything I read in the newspapers, you'll see these very serious allegations. You know, it's suggested that up to more than 100 Labour MPs have received between hundreds of pounds and hundreds of thousands of pounds in donations. That's the allegations in the press. With that in mind, can we clear this up? Instead of an investigation into one single individual, can there be an investigation into the entire operations of Labour Together? Nobody knows who they are, and we need to find out.
Secretary Jones.
Mr. Speaker, I thank my honourable friend for his question. As he knows, Labour Together is a private organisation. It is a question for its board, what it does in relation to its conduct. And as I've said already to the House, any donations that have been received by individual members in the House, whether from Labour Together or from other organisations, have, as far as I'm aware, all been declared in line with the rules, and there's been no accusations to otherwise.
Steve Buff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can the Minister confirm that the new head of Propriety and Ethics was appointed without a fully open competitive recruitment process? That the outgoing head of Propriety and Ethics was promoted to permanent secretary also without a fully open recruitment process? And he will know, if so, that both of those were in breach of rules put in place by the last government, by myself as Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, unless an individual minister signs off a waiver from that process. So can he say which minister signed off such an exemption and why patronage is preferred to open recruitment for such sensitive roles?
Secretary Jones.
Mr. Speaker, I was not privy to those appointments, and so I can't confirm the exact details that he asks of me. What I can say is that the senior civil servant who is currently acting as the Director of Propriety and Ethics is a temporary appointment subject to full recruitment in due course, which is in line with the rules that he's referred to.
Absalom Beck.
Speaker, the severity of the allegations against Labour Together cannot go amiss. The Minister says of the referral to the independent adviser that it would be then for the Prime Minister to decide. But given the Prime Minister's own Labour leadership campaign in 2020 was supported by Labour Together, does he feel that this would be appropriate? And what of the allegations against Labour Together beyond the role of the one cabinet office. Minister, what about those allegations? Who will investigate them? The minister himself said some weeks ago about the spirit of transparency and accountability following the role of Peter Mandelson. But is it not right, therefore, to actually be concerned as a minister, to actually want to see transparency and accountability on the allegations around Labour Together more widely?
Secretary Jones.
The Honourable Lady's question on transparency, I think, is answered by the fact that the independent advisers' conclusions and advice to the Prime Minister will be published in the normal way. It will be available for the public and for this House to see. The question on whether the Prime Minister is the appropriate person to decide, of course, constitutionally, the Prime Minister is the only person that gets to decide which ministers he advises His Majesty the King to appoint or to dismiss in the circumstances set out, and so it's right for the Prime Minister to come to that judgment.
What's of no doubt whatsoever is that countless Labour MPs took money from Labour Together. And Anna Sarwar and his now estranged Scottish Labour MPs must come clean about their close financial and personal relationships with the sullied organisation. But for some reason, they've all developed collective amnesia and have forgotten about their links with this rotten organisation, with their only defence being that they're utterly clueless. So will he now insist that Scottish Labour hand back the £100,000 that they took from this dodgy and disgraced organisation?
Secretary Jones.
As I've said to the House, Mr Speaker, individual donations will be declared in line with the rules in the normal way, and it's for those individuals to decide what they do with those donations.
Andy Backbone.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. This is truly a sordid affair. The Minister talks of receiving funds from Labour Together to work on policy. I just remind him that when I sat over there and others, we were quite content with the support that we received from the trade union movement, and we're proud to declare it as socialists. But when it comes to Labour Together and their funding basis, it seems clear to me that the former Chief of Staff in Downing Street was quite content with not declaring £730,000 of monies coming into the system, safe in the knowledge the Electoral Commission's powers were very limited, and a fine of £16,000 opposite £730,000 was simply the cost of doing business. So can the Minister assure me that Sir Laurie Magnus, when he looks at this matter, will look at the funding structure and consider whether we need to revisit the ways in which people can be penalised for such egregious transgressions and flagrant disregard for doing business properly? Because, to my mind, these individuals should bear responsibility personally. Like we ask for directors to be individually responsible, so should they in these circumstances.
Secretary Jones.
I thank my honourable friend for his question. The independent advisor on ethics will be looking at the ministerial code and its application to the parliamentary undersecretary in relation to the statements that have been made and the fact that have been made available through the proprietary and ethics team fact-finding process. He asked me wider questions around regulation of think tanks and donations and those types of things, which I'm sure will be debated as part of the forthcoming elections bill. But of course, I agree with my honourable friend that these things should be done in the proper and ethical way.
Sir Julian Lewis.
Given that it was the award ceremony, I think, last night, isn't it likely that if the government entered it, it would have won the BAFTA for one scandal after another? Isn't it the case that the facts in this matter are not in dispute? The organisation Labour Together did not declare massive donations, yeah, and was fined as a result.
Yeah.
And in response to that, its head, now a Labour minister, sought to gain dirt on the journalists, yep, who had truthfully reported the matter. Yep. Why does this need to be investigated? The facts are clear, the position is indefensible, and aren't the three ministers, who I regard as decent people and gentlemen, sick of being put forward to have to defend the indefensible?
Secretary Jones.
I thank the Right Honourable Member for his concern for our well-being. On the question of the investigation, as I've said, the independent ethics adviser will conduct his investigation and report to the Prime Minister in the normal way, and the Prime Minister will make a judgment at that point. It is not for me at the dispatch box to make the case one way or the other for the parties involved, but I can inform him that the allegations he's alluded to are disputed, and that's why it's important that the independent advisor is given the opportunity to undertake that process and advise the Prime Minister in the proper way.
Ian Burr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, Minister, party colleagues and I voted the Prime Minister and the General Secretary of the Labour Party raising our serious concerns over the allegations facing Labour together. It is absolutely essential that any investigation into these matters is demonstrated independent, thorough, transparent and now wide-ranging, listening to the many voices in this place. So for this very reason, would the Minister confirm the following, that published terms of reference for that investigation will be brought before Parliament, and also may I suggest to him that it would introduce the duty of candour of the proposed Hillsborough audit, any investigation.
Minister.
I thank my honourable friend for his question. The terms of reference for the independent ethics advisor is already published, as is the ministerial code. And as I've been able to confirm today, the advice that the advisor provides to the Prime Minister will also be made published. So all of those documents will be available for the House to see. And as he knows, the government supports the proposals in the Hillsborough Law and is working at pace to be able to complete the legislation to ensure a duty of candour is on the statute book.
Donny Crew.
Mr. Speaker, as usual, the government is hiding behind process, even when the process is so clearly compromised, as in this case. First, we hear that the Propriety and Ethics team are looking at this, even though we know that the leader of the Propriety and Ethics team is a former Labour Together staffer who was appointed according to inappropriate process. And then secondly, and I would be grateful if the Minister could repeat and perhaps explain this extraordinary claim he made earlier from the dispatch box, that in terms of the independent inquiry,
yes,
it is necessary for the Minister to stay in his role,
yes,
so that the inquiry can be carried out. It's an absolutely extraordinary suggestion, and could he please explain it? And secondly, could he simply confirm to the House that it is for the Prime Minister to appoint and dismiss ministers without reference to independent inquiries, and he is perfectly capable of making the right decision right now?
Yeah. Secretary Jones.
The Prime Minister made the ethics advisor independent coming into government because of the misuse of that process by former Prime Ministers who were trying to cover up for their friends. As a consequence of that, the Independent Ethics Advisor has not only illustrated his independence, but has proven that the independent process works, because where ministers have been in breach of the code, the Prime Minister has sacked them as a consequence. He made a statement that the leader of the Propriety and Ethics team was a former Labour Together staffer. That is not true, and that should be acknowledged. And he's also asked me a question, Mr. Speaker, about why ministers have to remain in post whilst they're being investigated by the Independent Ethics Advisor. Those are the rules for the system that we've inherited, but he raises an interesting question and we should consider that in the future. But for the time being, the rules are as established, and that requires the Minister to stay in post whilst they're being investigated.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Chief Secretary agrees with me, I hope he agrees with me, that any investigation into any matter should be done in an appropriate way, but a timely way. I just wonder, I know it's an independent investigation made, but I just wonder if the Chief Secretary could advise the House on any timescales whatsoever, and if there's not very close or very quick timescales, can you do anything to try and bring those forward?
Secretary Jones.
I thank my honourable friend for the question. The independent ethics advisor is able to conduct inquiries in the time that he considers necessary in relation to the facts and the number of documents and conversations that need to be had. But I agree with him that that advice ought to be made available as quickly as possible to the Prime Minister. And I would certainly hope for that to be the case in the coming days.
Sir John Whittingham.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Chief Secretary may be aware that at the end of this week, the UK takes on the chair of the Global Media Freedom Coalition,
yeah,
a partnership of 51 countries pledged to protect journalists and the freedom of the press. How could the UK have any credibility in that role,
yeah,
given the revelations of the behaviour of a member of this government, which are more akin to that of the worst authoritarian states?
Yeah.
I think the right honourable member talks down the country. The UK is rightly proud of the freedom of the press and its role in our democracy. And I know that both his party and mine support those principles. He's referred to allegations that have been made, and that's why an independent process is looking at the veracity of those allegations and any denial that is put to them. And as I say, the advice we put to the Prime Minister to make a call on that as soon as it's been made available.
Imran Hussain.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The actions of Labour together are viciously despicable. Any attack on the freedom of our press and individuals is unforgivable. The Minister keeps referring to an independent ethics advisor and at the same time admitting that his only remit is as far as the Ministerial Code of Conduct. The Minister needs to be reminded that the actions referred to are before the Minister was a sitting Minister. So I say this to him. These actions are such that they will cause irreparable and tremendous harm to the government and party. Only an independent investigation into all the actions of Labour together will suffice. Why will he not understand that?
Secretary Jones.
I thank my honourable friend for his question. The investigation that the government is conducting in relation to the minister is independent. The ethics advisor is independent, as I have alluded to a number of times. And the independent ethics advisor is able to look at the ministerial code, but also the circumstances that are in being asked in relation to the questions put to him. And his advice will make reference to that, I'm sure, when he comes to advise the Prime Minister. As I've said, I know that the Honourable Member will be disappointed by this, but the government can't instigate an investigation into a private organisation unless there is a legal basis to do so. And so it's therefore a question for the Board of Labour Together whether they wish to undertake any work on behalf of the allegations that have been made in the media.
There's Savile Roberts.
There are real concerns that non-UK state actors such as the commercial PR organisation APCO and possibly Palantir Technology are selling services to carry out surveillance with the purpose of smearing journalists in the United Kingdom. So if his government isn't just uttering polite, meaningless words about protecting journalists, surely now we need an independent investigation for this to move beyond process and within that to look at how to regulate such non-state actors.
I'm afraid, Mr. Speaker, I don't know the veracity of the allegations that the Honourable Lady makes, but I can share her concern that if that were to be true, it would clearly be unwelcome in the United Kingdom. And if laws and regulations need to be updated to prevent that from happening, then, of course, this House should consider them.
John Woodcock.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. For the Chief Secretary's statement, I'm wondering if he could clarify the actions that would be taken by the government should the investigation come back and it decides that there are further questions that need answer.
The independent adviser will write a letter to the Prime Minister following his investigation, which will detail the facts as he understands them, the case that has been made by the parties in question, and the independent advisor will then draw some form of conclusion on which the Prime Minister will then need to make a decision on how to act. And those options can include, as we've talked about in the House this afternoon, an agreement for the Minister to continue in post or not.
Rick Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister has today said that the independent ethics advisor will now investigate. Is this not another example of how poor the Prime Minister's judgment was by initially saying that the Cabinet Office can investigate the now Cabinet Office Minister? Was ludicrous. It was never going to be independent. It was never going to be comprehensive. The U-turn today is just so his Cabinet Secretary has something to talk about in today's statement, which the Minister, the Shadow Minister, has dragged him to the House for. Why is the Prime Minister's judgment constantly so bad?
Secretary Jones.
I think the Honourable Lady might be slightly confused, Mr. Speaker. The independent advisor on ethics is independent. I'll happily mansplain it to you, if I may say so, Mr. Speaker. The independent advisor is independent. There is a process that is followed because it's proper that proper process is followed. And I remind the House, as I alluded to earlier, the reason this process exists, the reason the ethics advisor is independent, was because of the repeated failures of the previous administration to make sure that ethics issues were dealt with properly. And so the referral to the independent advisor has been done promptly following fact-finding, and they will report in due course.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now, when the Prime Minister came to power promising to clean up politics, he declared that journalism is, and I quote, the lifeblood of democracy. Now, we all know that Labour Together helped mastermind the Prime Minister's own personal rise to the highest office in the land, and that they stand accused of running an orchestrated campaign to smear and discredit journalists. I think the Prime Minister should be here in this House answering questions, but my prediction is that day will come. So, in the meantime, does the front bench agree with me and an ex-founder of Labour Together when I quote him in saying that this is some dark shit?
Oh, order, 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 order. Mr. Leishman, no, no, you'll withdraw it, won't you? Yeah, stand up. I think I want a bit better, a bit more respect, please.
Please accept my apology, Mr. Speaker. I'll withdraw the bad language.
Mr. Speaker.
Right. Jeremy Corbyn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I take the Minister back to the very strange answer he gave to the question from the Member for Bradford? The Member for Bradford was asking for a full inquiry into all of the actions and activities of Labour Together, including the behaviour of Morgan McSweeney and the current Member for Makerfield. I want the inquiry to also extend to the undermining they did of the Labour Party leadership between 2015 and 2020, the systemic briefing, the systemic attacks, and the general undermining of the interests of the Labour Party whilst claiming to be supporting Labour Together. A single inquiry by a single person doesn't cut it. There needs to be an open, much more public investigation, not just into their behaviour, but also into their sources of funding, the expenditure they made, the donations they made, and would he confirm that political donations are not just cash payments, they're also secondment of staff and the use of facilities, all of which ought to be publicly and openly declared and clearly have not been.
Secretary Jones.
The Electoral Commission, Mr. Speaker, I think has looked at some of these issues in the past and fined Labour Together for previous areas, but other than that investigation, I'm not aware that there are any accusations of illegal or improper donations to Labour Together or other organisations. And as I said, it's important the government investigates matters that relate to the government and ministerial appointments, but questions for Labour Together as a private organisation is a question for their board.
A good job.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, can the Minister tell us what services, if any, as of today, Labour Together is providing either to the Labour Party or to the government?
I can only speak on behalf of the government, Mr. Speaker, and as far as I'm aware, they're not providing any services.
Jim Allister.
Mr. Speaker, if I understand this correctly, out of all of this unsavoury saga, there's a single investigation about a single minister. But that investigation, if it's under the ministerial code, will deal only with his time as a minister. So his previous involvement with Labour Together is beyond that remit, is it not? And yet we have in Labour Together a party within a party. Surely how it was funded, how it used those fundings, are all things that the Labour Party executive could conduct an investigation into. Is that not correct?
Labour Together, Mr. Speaker, is a separate organisation to the Labour Party. It's not for the Labour Party or the government to investigate third-party organisations. It would be like asking the government, Mr. Speaker, to investigate Tesco. It's not something the government can do unless there's a legal basis on which to do so. And his first question, I think in relation to the ministerial code, of course incorporates the Nolan principles that apply for all ministers and their appointment to government. And I'm sure the independent adviser will consider those when he considers the facts.
For the best objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Far be it from me to insert myself into the internecine warfare fast breaking out on the benches opposite. But the Minister pushed back when it was suggested that he had received donations from Labour Together. His register of interest shows £63,000 plus worth of donations in kind with regards to both his time in opposition and his time in government. But with that in mind, if the Public Administration and Constitutional Affairs Committee launches an inquiry into Labour Together, will he and his department cooperate with it?
Investigations by select committees of this House are a matter for those select committees, and the government will always comply with requests from committees.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister in opposition said that Boris Johnson always looked the other way
over standards in government and that he was corrupt. Yet Labour Together has been led by key advisers to the Prime Minister, including my constituency predecessor, and some remain in his cabinet to this day. With £730,000 in undeclared donations from millionaire venture capitalists and a payment of almost £36,000 to a PR firm to slurn investigative journalists, does the Minister agree with me that the public, who are promised real change, but all they're getting is much of the same, and that the great British people expect a lot better?
Sherry Jones.
The Prime Minister, Mr Speaker, was committed coming into office to improve the systems that we inherited. That has been established with the Independent Ethics Advisor being made independent, being able to conduct his investigations independently and to advise the Prime Minister, irrespective of whether the Prime Minister asks him to do so. It was done by our establishment of the Ethics and Integrity Committee. It was done by our introduction of the Hillsborough Law to bring a duty of candour into statute to ensure that officials and politicians have to tell the truth, where in the past they've been shown not to do so. These are just a number of examples about how the government is bolstering ethics and standards in public life, which he is right, the public expect from us. In relation to this particular matter, as I've said, the independent advisor will be considering the issues as they relate to the minister in question and advising the Prime Minister in the normal way.
Final question, Jim Shannon.
Yeah. Thank you. The Minister's an honourable man, but my goodness, you've got the short straw of the day, so you have, you know. These incredibly difficult allegations deserve and need honest answers. It is clear that this is yet another example of bodies overstretching their remit and indeed their rights. And I believe that the general public will view this as Big Brother watching over us all. So how will the Minister begin to yet once again rebuild trust in a government that respects individual rights and independence, not like some despot government to whom espionage on their own citizens is a normal occurrence? Thank you.
Sarah Jones.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. I think it's important just to clarify that the allegations are not against the Labour Party or the government. They're against the think tank Labour Together. There is no suggestion that the government is conducting business in the way he suggests. And he and I, and I'm sure the House will agree, that freedom of the press is an important cornerstone of our democracy and is something that we in this Parliament will always seek to protect.
Point of order, John Tree. Is it relevant to what we've just had to?
The House will have heard me suggest that the Minister had received a donation of almost £60,000. I withdrew that suggestion following an indication by the Minister that that wasn't correct. I've now had an opportunity to look at his declaration of interests for the early months of 2004. He's received two donations amounting to just £60,000. I accept it wasn't in cash, so I wanted to clear what I had said, make it clear. But on the other hand, the Minister has received a significant amount of money. I seek your guidance whether ministers who have received money need to declare their interest before responding on matters which relate to Labour Together. Maybe you haven't considered that, and you can give us guidance later, Mr Speaker.
Maybe Secretary Jones wants to answer it rather than me. Secretary Jones.
I'm very happy to, Mr Speaker. As the Honourable Member pointed out, I've not received £1 in cash from Labour Together, which was the suggestion from some members in the House. Instead, I received some hours of seconded time from staff whilst in opposition who were providing policy research to my role when I was in the Shadow Cabinet, which was normal at that time, whether in relation to Labour Together, trade unions or other organisations. And I'm very happy to confirm that those were declared in the proper way. There's been no breach of the rules and I'm happy to declare them to the House today.
Rather than keep this going, Luke, if the Honourable Member believes there is something wrong, you would almost, my advice would be go to Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards. That would be the way, rather than debate it on the floor of the House. John MacDonald, point of order.
I apologise, Mr Speaker. I don't want to delay matters, but it's now reported in the media that the Honourable Member for Macclesfield has accidentally messaged details of his case to a mass WhatsApp group of the 2024 intake of Labour MPs. And he said, Johnny rang me, I take it the Chief Whip. PM will ask Laurie to look into it, I take it the Independent Advisor. Aim is to move fast, but PET, that's the Propriety and Ethics team, did find I had not broken the code. Well, the PET team cannot determine whether or not a minister has broken the code or not. And it's quite clear a government spokesperson has said this was an accidental post, clearly meant for a more private conversation. And it's right that the independent advisor takes this away now. Could I ask your assurance, Mr. Speaker, that whatever has been provided to this member from the propriety and ethics team is published immediately and that there is openness and transparency on this matter?
Secretary Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I understand that the Chief Whip spoke to the Minister this morning to inform him that the Prime Minister had decided to refer the matter to the independent adviser, but I can confirm that the propriety and ethics team will not have made a judgment one way or another about whether the Minister has been cleared or not in relation to the ministerial code. The propriety and ethics team advised the Prime Minister to refer it to the independent adviser, and it's for the independent adviser to come to a judgment on that and then to report to the Prime Minister.
I'm going to leave it at that. Just say PET will not be making the decision. That's what we've read. Right, before we start our next business, before we come to the statement updating the House on the Government's response to the humble address motion, I'd like to remind the House that Lord Peter Mandelson is the subject of an ongoing live police investigation. I understand that there is interest from the public on this matter, and there has been coverage, or much coverage, in the media. While the matter is not currently sub judice, I would gently say to members that it would be helpful to exercise a degree of restraint in referencing specific matters under investigation. I know the House would not wish to do anything that risks prejudicing this investigation. Secretary Jones.
With permission, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to make a statement regarding the Government's response to the humble address laid before the House on the 4th of February. I committed to keeping the House updated. This is now my third statement on this issue, and I will continue to update the House throughout the process. Mr. Speaker, I will first update the House on the work that is already being undertaken by the Government. I can confirm that work is ongoing across departments to search for and identify the material relevant to the humble address, and departments have been instructed to retain material which may be relevant to this motion. Given the breadth of the motion as drafted, this is clearly a process which will take some time. However, I want to reassure colleagues that officials have been working throughout the recess period and are expecting to compile information relating to the House's request very shortly. As the motion envisages, we are carefully assessing the material for whether any of it may be prejudicial to national security or international relations. The House will appreciate that this remains a sensitive matter, and the Government is committed to referring this material to the Intelligence and Security Committee. The Cabinet Office is leading this work in close cooperation with the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, in a process agreed by the Permanent Secretary of the Cabinet Office as delegated by the new Cabinet Secretary following her appointment by the Prime Minister last Thursday. The Government intends to publish documents in tranches instead of one publication at the end of the process, given that we are unable to confirm how long that process will take. On that basis, the Government expects to be able to publish the first tranche of documents very shortly in early March. I should, however, inform the House that it remains the case that a subset of this first tranche of documents is currently subject to the ongoing Metropolitan Police investigation. This includes correspondence between Number 10 and Lord Peter Mandelson, in which a number of follow-up questions were asked. Because of the Metropolitan Police's interest in this document, we are unable to publish it in early March in the first tranche, but will release it as soon as we're able to do so in consultation with the Metropolitan Police. There is also a small portion of that material which engages matters of national security or international relations, and thus the role this House has envisaged for the Intelligence and Security Committee. We are working with the committee to establish processes for making this material available to them, and we're very grateful to the committee in advance for their important contribution to reviewing these documents. Mr. Speaker, I recognise the House will want to know about the next steps around the publication of the remainder of the information relevant to the motion that is not included in the first tranche. I would like to make it clear that anything we publish will be in line with our normal approach to publishing material in the House, such as redactions of junior officials' names and, where relevant, legal professional privilege. Further work is needed to compile the information in scope and conduct to conduct the necessary assessments. However, I can commit to the House that we will release this further material subject to the ongoing process with the Met Police and the Intelligence and Security Committee, and will continue to keep members updated as we make progress. I welcome the House's patience as the Government works swiftly to comply with the humble address. Mr. Speaker, with your permission, on a separate matter before I conclude, I understand there's been a high level of public interest in the news of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's arrest last Thursday and what may follow. The Government is clear that we are not ruling out action in respect of the line of succession at this stage, and we will consider whether any further steps are required in due course. It is vital, however, that we first allow the police to carry out their investigations. I know they will have the full support of the government, and I'm sure this House, as they do so. I will return to the House with further updates, as I've committed to do so, Mr. Speaker, not just on this issue, but in relation to wider reforms to standards, lobbying, transparency, and the removal of peerages in due course. And I commend this statement to the House.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Chief Secretary for the statement, which we received at 3:38 p.m, and gently suggest to him that the 45 minutes referred to in the Ministerial Code is a minimum rather than a target. On 4th of February, this House voted across parties for a humble address to be presented. That is not a polite suggestion. It is a formal command from Parliament to the Executive. Yet 3 weeks later, the Government's progress moves with the urgency of a tired sloth on a bank holiday Monday. Before the recess, my honourable friend from Brentwood and Ongar sent a comprehensive list of questions to the Cabinet Office. He received nothing back. Not a letter, not a postcard, not even an out-of-office reply. So let's try for some verbal clarity today. The Prime Minister previously staked the integrity of this process on the personal oversight of the Cabinet Secretary, and then he sacked him. Has the change in Cabinet Secretary caused a scoping delay, or is the government simply using the handover as a convenient long grass to kick this into? Reports suggest a secret investigation into Lord Mandelson's conduct took place last September. My honourable friend asked about this on the floor of the House, and he asked again in writing, but silence. So, can the Chief Secretary tell us, does this report exist? If so, who wrote it? And will the government stop playing hide-and-seek and publish it? The government calls this an urgent review, yet the terms of reference remain as elusive as the coherent Treasury forecast. The Parliament Secretary to the Cabinet Office promised my honourable friend in the debate on the 4th of February that he would write with answers, yet there is still nothing. So can the Chief Secretary tell us, does the scope include the £241 million Ministry of Defence contract awarded to Palantir following Lord Mandelson's off-diary meetings? Does it cover Global Council? Or are we only looking at bits of the noble lord's Rolodex that aren't politically explosive? The Intelligence and Security Committee is being asked to help, yet its secretariat consists of Cabinet Office civil servants. Mr. Speaker, as the ISC itself warned last May, an oversight body should not be beholden to the very organisation it is supposed to be overseeing. So if this is a genuine audit, what steps are being taken to ensure that the committee can operate without conflicts of interest when Cabinet Office staff are considering material that relates directly to decisions taken by the Cabinet Office itself? Mr. Speaker, you could not have been clearer. The police cannot dictate to this House. Yet the government remains coy about the legal basis for withholding documents. So we need an unequivocal commitment today. Once the police are finished, every withheld page must be published. No excuses, no redactions by stealth. And in the meantime, any documents that are withheld from publication at the request of the police are handed to the ISC immediately, as you indicated after the debate. Finally, will the Chief Secretary commit to a Keeling-style register for all withheld documents? If the government has nothing to hide, they should have no problem listing exactly what they are keeping from us and why. Mr. Speaker, the opposition has acted in good faith. We have been patient, but careful work must not become a euphemism for managed delay. This House gave a constitutional instruction on 4th of February. It is time the government stopped treating Parliament like an inconvenient interruption to their schedule, stopped giving every impression that their priority is working out who's back to cover, and started providing some actual answers so that we can start to get to the bottom of this murky matter.
Secretary Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Shadow Minister asked me a number of questions, which I will take in turn. The first, he asked me if the appointment of the new Cabinet Secretary had resulted in any delay or change to the process. The answer is no to that. The process has been led by the Permanent Secretary in the Cabinet Office as delegated to her by the former and new Cabinet Secretary. He referred to a secret report. As far as I'm aware, there is no secret report, and all the documents will be published in the proper way. But he must recognise, Mr. Speaker, that we are trying to manage a criminal investigation by the Metropolitan Police, and I'm sure the House would not want us to inadvertently interfere with that process. That needs to be allowed to happen in the proper way. And we are working closely with the Intelligence and Security Committee to make sure that they're able to fulfil the requirements of the humble address and that we support them to do so. And whilst it's not for me to talk for the Intelligence and Security Committee, Mr. Speaker, the Shadow Minister questioned its independence, which I'm sure every member of it will very strongly refute, given that they honour their independence very strongly and the government respects that entirely.
Andy MacDonald.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the right honourable member for his statement. And I do agree that the Prime Minister was quite right to put the Lord of the Files outside of the tent. Eventually, he got there. But when it comes to this investigation, can he assure me that the $64,000 question about what was known at his time of his appointment to the US ambassador role will be put in the public domain? Because there are many people in this place and across the country who would not have touched Peter Mandelson with a barge pole, and they're trying to get their head round why on earth this government wasn't of the same view.
Secretary Jones.
I can confirm, Mr. Speaker, that those documents will be made available, subject, I'm afraid, to the exclusion of one particular item, which was number 10, asking Peter Mandelson a number of questions, which, as I say, the Met Police have asked to be held back subject to their investigation. That will have to be published, therefore, at a later date. But the documents that are not subject to the Met Police investigation will be published very shortly.
Tom Morrison, Liberal Democrat spokesperson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The victims of Jeffrey Epstein have always been and must remain at the forefront of our minds. The decades of abuse and suffering they endured can never be undone. And while nothing can erase that pain, we believe the recent decisions taken by the police and the government represent a step in the right direction. And we welcome the government has begun working to release the files relating to the role of Peter Mandelson. Parliament asks for transparency and the public deserves it. Earlier this month, my right honourable friend, the member for Kingston and Surbiton, called for a full statutory public inquiry into Jeffrey Epstein and his influence on the British political establishment. Only through an independent inquiry can we uncover the truth and deliver justice for the victims. So will the government support this call? And once again, allegations of sleaze and scandal cast a shadow over our politics. After a decade of misconduct and rule-breaking under successive governments, it is clear the current system is not fit for purpose. So can I ask the Minister, will the government finally commit to putting the ministerial code on a statutory footing, ensuring that breaches carry real consequence? And finally, will the Minister commit to protecting those who speak out by establishing a new Office of the Whistleblower, strengthening legal protections and increasing public awareness of whistleblowers' rights? Transparency, accountability and integrity in public life are not optional. They are essential.
Secretary Jones.
I thank the honourable member for his statement. In relation to investigations and inquiries, the House will know that the criminal investigation being led by the Metropolitan Police, I'm afraid at the moment, takes primacy, because the House would not want to, and nor would the government, inadvertently to interfere with that process. But the government agrees with the honourable member that it is important that people are held to account for their actions and the victims receive justice. He invites me to comment on some suggested reforms. As I've said to the House before, I'm very happy to consider them, in particular the proposals from the Liberal Democrat benches on whistleblowing. I think either the honourable member or his colleagues are due to write to me about that in due course. I would just say on the ministerial code, the ministerial code, as far as I can tell, is working, because there is an independent adviser who is very effective, advises the Prime Minister, and when there's a breach, ministers are removed from office. So I'm not entirely sure what a statutory footing would add in terms of additional value, given we've given the independence to the ethics adviser and the code itself seems to be being applied very effectively.
Janet Degg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I firstly wish to share the sentiment expressed by many in this House, and my thoughts are with the hundreds of survivors of this horrific sexual abuse, and most of them children. The public rightly expect holders of high office to maintain a high level of conduct, and the Prime Minister rightly called for the removal of peerages from disgraced peers. Could the Chief Secretary confirm the Government is providing the police with the support it needs to progress the criminal investigation?
Secretary Jones.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. I can confirm to my honourable friend that the Government is complying and will continue to comply fully with the requests of the Metropolitan Police, in addition to the request from Parliament in relation to the humble address. And she is right to say that it's important that we do so in order to bring transparency and accountability to these most egregious actions.
Sergeant Gale.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. Could the Minister clarify whether or not the Cabinet Secretary's review into Lord Mandelston will be advised by the Cabinet Office Propriety and Ethics Team? I ask, Madam Deputy Speaker, for two reasons. I think I'm right in saying it was the PET team that undertook the original so-called due diligence into Lord Mandelston. And second, in the light of the intervention by the Right Honourable Gentleman, the member of Hayes and Harlington, a few moments ago, about the involvement of the PET team in an earlier and unsavoury matter, I'm not sure that the House will have much confidence in that team.
Madam Deputy Speaker, my experience of the civil servants in the Propriety and Ethics team is unquestionable. They work extremely hard, they comply with the Civil Service Code, and they seek to ensure that government upholds all of the ethics and integrity rules that we are subject to. I have not in one instance seen any suggestion of poor performance or conflicts of interest in that team, and I wholeheartedly endorse their work.
Rachel Maskell.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. Palantir is a client of Global Counsel, which was Peter Mandelson's PR agency, and clearly Palantir has benefited from lucrative contracts from the government. So will he ensure that all papers associated with Palantir are published as part of this inquiry?
Secretary Jones.
The documents that are published as part of the humble address will, of course, comply with the terms of the humble address. And I think, as I said to honourable members in the House before, if there are particular suggestions or concerns about specific Palantir contracts, those representations, with our assistance, if helpful, should be made to the departments. But I have not seen any suggestion that there's been any breach of procurement rules in relation to the issues raised.
Julie Lewis.
In response to an earlier question about the role of the ISC in relation to the Cabinet Office, the Minister rightly said that the ISC is concerned about its independence. But I can vouch for the fact, as its former chairman, that it was particularly concerned about the dominant role in which the Cabinet Office had in its affairs. And my successor as chairman, in his annual report covering 2023 to 25, which was published on 15th of December last year, actually states that the committee in the last parliament became very seriously concerned that the vital scrutiny which the ISC provides was being undermined by continued involvement by the Cabinet Office in the committee's office. The root of the problem lies in the control exerted over the committee's staff and resourcing by the Cabinet Office. This is an opportunity to let the ISC have what it has wanted and asked for years, which is independence from the Cabinet Office. Will the Minister take that message back, please?
I think the Right Honourable Member is referring to 2023, which is, of course, before this government was in office. But I can confirm that we are in the middle of negotiations with the committee on a number of issues, partly in relation to its headcount, where we've increased the budget available to the committee for staffing. And I know that the question of whether those staff should be independently employed separately to the Cabinet Office is one that we're considering at the moment. But I would just remind the House, Madam Deputy Speaker, again, not that it's for me to speak on behalf of the committee, I'm sure the Right Honourable Member would agree, even though those staff are currently employed by the Cabinet Office, the work they do for the committee is exemplary, and the committee itself is very strongly independent of government.
Matt Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. I thank the Chief Secretary for his statement. I welcome the comments from the Prime Minister calling for legislation to remove peerages from disgraced peers such as Mandelson. I hope you go even further and look at the line of succession in the royal family as well, and I welcome those updates. However, my constituents, victims, groups, everyone I speak to, it's great to hear the messages. They want to know when. So do we have any timescales of when this legislation is going to be brought forward to the House?
Secretary.
We're working with the relevant advisers and departments at the moment to scope the bill itself and the measures that need to be brought forward in order for that to be effective. The legislation does raise a number of constitutional questions, which is taking some time for government to consider, because the last time peerages were removed, I think, was in the 1600s. So it's not been something that's been done recently. And so we just need to ensure that the scope and drafting of the bill is done in a way which means that it will be effective when it's brought forward to the House.
Christine Jardy.
Thank you very much, Madam Deputy Speaker. This is the second in a row statement that we've had, or urgent question in this House, about ethics and just exactly where tentacles of various organisations and individuals go within the government. So would the Minister accept that what we need is a statutory inquiry that looks very closely at the links and the interference of outside bodies in government and in the operation of government?
Jones.
I've already committed on behalf of the government, Madam Deputy Speaker, that we will review the current regime and rules in relation to transparency on lobbying. Some changes have been made recently in relation to the register and their declared interests, but my sense is that we could go further. And as I said in my statement, I'll come back to the House in due course to update the House on how we'll be able to take those reforms forward together.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. And I thank the Chief Secretary for his statement and coming again to the House to talk about this really important statement. And can I also add my thanks to the Intelligence and Security Committee for the work that they've done on this particular issue. And would the Chief Secretary agree with me that actually making sure we get this process right is what our constituents deserve, but also what the victims of these vile crimes absolutely deserve?
I agree with my honourable friend, both in relation to the criminal investigation being conducted by the Metropolitan Police, where the government, of course, wants to support and collaborate with the Metropolitan Police to ensure that where justice can be found, that it must, but also in respect of the Intelligence and Security Committee, which is an important function in this House to support the work of Parliament. And we are currently working together to ensure that the processes and capacity is in place to honour the commitments in the humble address in a way that means that the House is served with these documents as quickly and as effectively as possible.
Dr. Andrew Morrison.
Regular updates are all well and good and they're appreciated, but it's a classic Whitehall strategy for disguising management, managed delay. When we get tranche one, will the Minister ensure that it is substantial and deal with the two key issues, which is the issue of what the Prime Minister knew at the point he appointed Andelson, what the agencies and what Pett advised with the Prime Minister in relation to Mandelson's connection with the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein at the point of appointment, and two, the details of this dodgy, shady-looking Palantir deal involving Alex Kane, the Prime Minister, and Peter Mandelson.
I can confirm, Madam Deputy Speaker, that the first tranche of documents that will be released are the documents that government currently holds, subject to the exclusion of one document at the request of the Metropolitan Police, where subsequent questions were asked by Number 10 of Peter Mandelson. That can only be released when the Metropolitan Police tell us it can be released, and subject to a review with the Intelligence and Security Committee of some individual line items which might be considered national security or international relations related, as set out in the terms of the humble address. The subsequent tranches of information will come in due course, because commissions have gone out across government for those departments to search their archives and databases to bring forward any documents that relate to the terms of the humble address. And given the depth of the issues raised in the humble address, that of course will take some time to process.
Brendan O'Hara.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. Right now, trust in this chaotic government has all but evaporated, and the Prime Minister's personal judgment is now on trial. We know that millions of documents are still to come out, so the government really only has one chance to come clean, and any attempt to sanitise what is made public could have disastrous consequences for our democracy. So can the government guarantee that the criteria for releasing the information will be exactly what this House demanded, and that the appointment of a new head of the civil service will not alter that one iota?
The appointment of a new Cabinet Secretary has no bearing whatsoever on this process or the Government's compliance with the humble address. And, of course, as the Honourable Member would expect, the Government will comply with the terms of the humble address.
Dr. Ben Spencer.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. A particular additional concern I have with the appointment of Peter Mandelson was that the American Government had compromising information in the form of the Epstein files, and that consideration as to the appointment of an ambassador who is going to go into sensitive negotiations with a foreign government, knowing that the government had compromising information. Can you confirm that those considerations and that information is in scope of the disclosures?
I'm not sure, Madam Deputy Speaker, which document specifically the Honourable Member refers to. I would just note that the documents that were released by the US Department for Justice and previously via Bloomberg in September 2025 were documents that the Prime Minister and the Government were not privy to until those disclosures had taken place.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. I'd like to draw the House's attention to the Register of Interests and my declaration as connection with Whistleblowing UK, a not-for-profit organisation. Thank you. I'm really concerned that we still have no conclusion to the Public Office Accountability Bill. It seems to be stuck on Amendment 23, which is still being discussed. So I'm not sure how the government's going to ensure that there are criminal sanctions, maybe against ministers who fail to whistleblow. And will the minister commit to protecting whistleblowers by establishing a new independent office of the whistleblower so that people, the members of the public, understand that they can have legal protections and much greater awareness of their rights about whistleblowing? Ms. Jones.
I hear the very strong interest from the Liberal Democrat benches on the office for the whistleblower proposal. As I've said to her honourable friend, I'm very happy to look at those details when her colleagues write to me with them. In respect of the duty of candour bill, the government's committed to bringing that back to the House as quickly as possible and for it to be completed in this session. We are just in the process of negotiations with the families and the intelligence agencies and the Intelligence and Security Committee on one final issue, and as soon as we've been able to resolve that, we hope to be able to progress the bill at pace.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. We must see these documents that pertain to the appointment of Peter Mandelson, but given that any member of the public could have told the government that he was dodgy, it seems amazing that the Prime Minister requested that this vetting happen in the first place. This is not a question of process, it is a matter of judgment. Does the Minister believe that these documents will reveal why the Prime Minister's judgment is consistently so poor?
Dr. Jones.
I believe, Madam Deputy Speaker, that the documents will show that the Prime Minister was lied to by Peter Mandelson.
Yep.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. It's very clear that the issue has been referred to the Intelligence and Security Committee, and it's very clear that they're going to be looking at issues of national security and international relations. I intervened on the debate on this, and he possibly heard that intervention. I want it to be very clear that in the event of them discovering commercial links of Mandelson to any company, including Palantir, but not excluding others, that they will also be pursued, and they're not going to be ignored because they don't necessarily immediately impact on the very narrow definition of national security and international relations.
Dr. Jones.
I thank the Right Honourable Member for his question. Of course, the Commission for Information from Departments, which is currently taking place, has not yet resulted in those documents being shared with the Cabinet Office. Once they are, if there are issues that need to be pursued further, of course, we reserve the right to do so.
Danny Kruger.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. I wish I had started counting at the beginning of this debate how often the Minister used the word process. The word that I've been listening out for and haven't heard him say is the word responsibility. Does he accept that it is the job of the Prime Minister to make all of these appointments without reference to backroom bureaucrats and lawyers? And should he not just now accept that he made a terrible mistake in respect to Peter Mandelson and do the right thing and reveal all the papers immediately?
Dr. Jones.
It's interesting to hear from the reform benches, Madam Deputy Speaker, that they don't agree with process or vetting. But, of course, the government is committed to both of those things because that's the way in which government should conduct itself. As the Prime Minister has already said at the dispatch box, had he had the information available to him at the point of appointment that we all do now, he would not have appointed Peter Mandelson. And on that basis, he has apologised for any distress that's caused for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein.
Jim Alistair.
If I understand the Minister correctly, he is saying that when it comes to the disclosure of documents, the Metropolitan Police will have an unquestioned discretion as to whether or not to disclose. Moving forward from that, if there then is no prosecution, presumably all those documents at that point would be disclosed. But if there is a prosecution, Those documents which are relied on for that prosecution, one presumes, would not be disclosed until after the prosecution. But there would be a cadre of documents that are not being relied upon for the prosecution, but because they've been in the possession of the Metropolitan Police, will be subject to disclosure to the defence. At the point when the PPS decides they're not relying on them, will those disclosable documents be published?
Secretary Jones.
And Madam Deputy Speaker, any documents that the Met Police tell the government is related to their criminal investigations, do not disclose until they tell us that they are available to be disclosed. That will be on the basis that they are not relevant to the prosecution or because the prosecution has been taken forward or otherwise. And I would just say, Madam Deputy Speaker, that I think the last thing that anyone would want in the House is for us to undertake a process that ultimately undermines a case should the CPS decide to bring it to the courts when we want proper justice to be delivered in the court. And that's why we're honouring the request of the Metropolitan Police in the pursuit of justice.
Final question, Jim Shannon.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. The question on all of our lips in this House and the lips of all this nation is, when will this ever end? And it's an eternal question. It is understandable that government will stagger the documentation. However, staggering must not be staging. So will the Minister once again reassure the members of this House and this nation that the time for covering has long passed and that openness and allowing the information to be understood is an essential component of trust as ever to be rebuilt? Thank you.
Jones.
I thank the Honourable Member for his question, and he's right that we should publish, the government should publish these documents as quickly as possible, not just to comply with the humble address from this House, but to ensure that they are made transparent. And given that I'm unable to confirm to the House today how much information we will receive from government departments in relation to the Commission for Information, and as a consequence, how long it would take both for that process to conclude, for the Metropolitan Police to release any documents, and for the Intelligence and Security Committee to conduct its work, I thought it was better that the government publish the documents as available as quickly as possible, instead of waiting until the end of an undetermined period. And I hope that that suits the spirit as well as the letter of the humble address.
That is the end of that statement. I'll give the front benches a few moments to shuffle over.